Hello, and welcome to 15 Minute History. This season is about villains, the signs of their rise to power, and the steps heroes take to defeat them. If this is your first time here, we're glad to have you. Stay connected with us at our website, 15minutehistorypodcast.org, for transcripts, older episodes, or to get in touch with us. We love hearing from you, so please send us questions and comments. Now, let's start the show.
Kings are the slaves of history. Leo Tolstoy.
When reviewing evil in history, ancient kings are easy targets. It is common to review their lives out of the context of their time, apply current values to ancient actions, and judge them accordingly. The landscape of known history is wrought with stories of conquest and destruction, with ancient powers moving against one another for land, power, money, and influence. In all of these incidents, intentions matter. Was the intention of a specific king to simply destroy the civilization or expand rule and, as a result, do everything they could to spare lives? What if they were forced to do something we would consider evil, but in the context of the moment, was simply their only option? In today's episode, we review two kings and detail two major events during their reign. Both acts, one of siege and the other of utter destruction, are laid out for you, our audience, to evaluate. In your deliberation, consider the context and culture, who the king was, the time in which the action takes place, and the outcome of the event. The intention of each king is different, so we want to consider them as we look through the lens of history. Sennacherib. It's 1705 BC, and a new king has ascended to the Assyrian throne. At this time, the Empire of Assyria stretches across modern-day Iraq, parts of Iran, Kuwait, Syria, and Turkey. Founded as a small city-state over 200 years before, the country expanded rapidly through military campaigns and new technology, such as iron weapons. For Assyria, their hunger for new territory and conquest was only eclipsed by their cruelty, psychological warfare, and exhaustive documentation of each event and accomplishment. After conquering a city or nation, the subjugated peoples were often tortured, flayed alive, dismembered, or burned to death. Other historical accounts show mutilation of captured soldiers, where the lips were cut off before the victims were set free, preserving their life, but forever marring their appearance and quality of life. The bloodthirsty troops, addled by the heat of battle, were known to enjoy this phase of the invasion, spending days and taking their time with their new victims until all that was left were bodies hanging from walls, stacked high in the middle of city squares, or fed to the dogs. As stories of cruelty spread, cities surrendered, which often spared the inhabitants from such atrocities, and the empire expanded. Sennacherib, the new king, had already served in many capacities as a crown prince, learning leadership, diplomacy, and military tactics. Drawing from his vast experience in warfare and governance, Sennacherib quickly crowned himself king to offset other potential claimants on the throne. Knowing the insurrection happening in Babylon and in other areas of his kingdom, his chief goal was to bring the venerated city and other rebellious southern areas of the kingdom back into the fold. Targeting smaller rebellious groups and employing the same tactics mentioned earlier, he marched on Babylon, which surrendered without resistance. In return, the city suffered very little, and no citizens were harmed. In 701, he went to war in the Levant, modern-day Syria, and defeated many Hittite and Phoenician cities in addition to accepting the surrender of many northern regions who, like other territories, did not want to test the myths of cruelty surrounding those who opposed the Assyrian Empire. Unfortunately, this proved to be a much harder campaign due to the resistance by rebellious cities in the Kingdom of Egypt, who attacked Sennacherib's forces as part of an alliance with the nation of Judah. After annihilating the Egyptian army, Sennacherib marched back to the Judean cities, or laying siege until through force, the city would surrender and be destroyed. The last territory standing in Judah was its capital, Jerusalem, whose defenses were led by King Hezekiah. Historical records speak to the fact that the victorious Assyrian forces converged on the already besieged city. Some detailed Assyrian records bragged, which was common for many ancient cultures, about these achievements. In addition, when speaking about Jerusalem, the king made boasts as laid out by his scribes, saying, "As for Hezekiah, like a caged bird, I shut up in Jerusalem his royal city. I barricaded him with outposts and exit from the gate of his city, I made taboo for him. The table was set for the city to fall. No support was coming, and there was no way to hold out against the siege of a world power. Then, something happened. Ancient and modern historians are divided on what that something was. But for whatever reason, the Assyrians, one of the most powerful empires in the world at the time, abruptly withdrew from the relatively small capital of Jerusalem and went back to their capital of Nineveh, never to march against the Jews again. Before the withdrawal, Assyrian records state that a messenger was sent to the gates of Jerusalem, demanding its surrender, calling out in Hebrew that the God they served had ordained the city's destruction. The book of 2 Kings in the Bible corroborates this information, but goes into greater detail. There it is said that the messenger reminded the Jews that their king had put his hopes in the Egyptians who had been defeated, had already failed them by not paying tribute, and that their God would not save them. This tactic was routine for the Assyrians, and was directed at turning the people of the city against their king as a means to force a surrender. Although they had a history of extreme cruelty in war, they understood that war was expensive, and any capture or conquering of a territory without the spill of blood or use of resources was more desirable than the alternative. In addition, the army had already destroyed every other city in Judah, leaving Jerusalem alone and without support. As the messenger called out blasphemies against Judah and their God, it is recorded in the book of 2 Kings that King Hezekiah tore his clothes and prayed to his God for deliverance. In chapter 19, the Lord answered Hezekiah. Therefore, this is what the Lord says concerning the king of Assyria. He will not enter this city or shoot an arrow here. He will not come before it with a shield or build a siege ramp against it. By the way he came, he will return. He will not enter this city, declares the Lord. I will defend this city and save it, for my sake and for the sake of David, my servant. It is written that in the night, the Lord sent an angel to kill 180,000 of the Assyrians, causing them to withdraw. While there is no direct mention of soldiers being slain by an angel in the Assyrian records, there is also no mention of Jerusalem being conquered. Details are given about the destruction of every other city in Judah, but only insults are listed for Jerusalem before the detailed withdrawal. In addition, several other ancient cultures record this event as being, in short, out of the ordinary. Massive casualties are recorded, mounds of Assyrian dead, abandoned tents and other equipment that was left in haste. Herodotus, a prominent historian from ancient Greece, stated a theory that millions of mice destroyed the bowstrings of the army, which caused the full retreat. Modern-day historians cite a sudden disease or a type of pestilence. While there are many theories apart from the passages in 2 Kings, the fact is that one of the most powerful empires in the world at the time abandoned a fortified siege, struck camp, and got as far away from Jerusalem as possible. This is indisputable. Sennacherib would never set foot in that territory again. His reign would continue until 681 BC when he was murdered by his sons. The legacy of Sennacherib is surprisingly not only one of conquest, but of architecture and governance. While one of the pillars of his reign was conflict, many historians argue that his interest in war only extended to putting down rebellions and reclaiming territories that had strayed away. For example, he put down several uprisings in Babylon before finally having to destroy it as a result of running out of options. In addition, it is theorized that his dedication to preserving the empire may have been linked to the need for more funds that would pay for the renovation of Nineveh, other architectural projects, gardens, and other social reforms that built the might of Assyria. With this in mind, we know that his intention was to subjugate Jerusalem. This was his goal and stated purpose. The other cities of Judah had already suffered the fate of Assyrian cruelty, so it is highly likely that the capital would have experienced the same outcome. With this intention, was the action evil? Though the outcome did not result in Jerusalem being conquered, was the intention to conduct the atrocity on the same level of the action to do so? We leave that for you to decide. Nebuchadnezzar II. Over the next 100 years, the Assyrian Empire would lose influence and shrink, giving way to new players on the world stage. One such player was the Neo-Babylonian Empire. Consisting of modern-day Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Israel, the greatest of their kings was the one that solidified the foothold of power for the empire. Nebuchadnezzar II was the greatest king in Babylonian history. During his reign, which lasted from 605 to 562 BC, his achievements were multifaceted, spanning military, political, and cultural domains, and leaving a lasting impact on the ancient world. One of his greatest accomplishments was his expansion of the empire through military conquest. Unlike the Assyrians, he put more of an onus on the preservation of the territories that he conquered through perceived and often real aggression. In this way, Nebuchadnezzar became known for his renowned military leadership, and as his territory expanded, so did his reputation. He consolidated his father's conquests and absorbed the former regions of the Assyrian Empire, crushing resistance and securing control over the Levant and Syria. His military campaigns and strategic victories, such as the defeat of the Egyptian army at Carchemish and Hamath, solidified his empire's power and established him as one of the most powerful rulers of his time. In addition, Nebuchadnezzar's reign was characterized by extensive building projects and the restoration of Babylon to its former glory. He completed and extended the fortifications of the city, built a great moat and a new outer defense wall, and paved the ceremonial procession way with limestone. One of his most famous construction projects was the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, which was considered one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Under his rule, Babylon became the center for the arts, intellectual pursuits, and architectural marvels, earning a reputation as a city of pure opulence. Though not considered a cruel king in comparison to others in his time, one incident stands out. In 597 BC, Nebuchadnezzar besieged and captured Jerusalem. He did not destroy the city, but instead installed a vassal who swore allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar in loyalty and tribute. This vassal, Zedekiah, was not long on the throne before beginning to conspire against the king of Babylon with neighboring countries, especially Egypt. Historical records show that Nebuchadnezzar marched on Jerusalem as a result and issued demands for the surrender of the fortified city. This is also recorded in the book of Jeremiah, where the prophet of the same name pressed Zedekiah to surrender, warning him that such was the Lord's instruction. Babylonian records indicate that King Zedekiah did not heed these words, and instead resisted, prompting a full assault on the city. The king of Jerusalem fled with his family and officials, but was captured and brought back. Due to his resistance, Nebuchadnezzar wanted to make an example of him to warn other territories against rebellion. He brought King Zedekiah to a public place and murdered his sons in front of him before gouging out his eyes so that the horrible death of his children was the last thing he ever saw. The king of Babylon then razed the city to the ground, enslaving those who survived the onslaught while leaving the old and feeble behind in the rubble. Nebuchadnezzar's legacy as a ruler, warrior king, and patron of the arts and architecture endures to this day. Do his evil actions in Jerusalem and other atrocities across his campaigns classify him as evil? Historians have repeatedly supported the fact that his accomplishments left an indelible mark on the ancient world, and his reign is remembered as a time of great prosperity and cultural flourishing in Babylon. Do these successes outweigh his monstrous actions committed during his conquests? His intention was never to destroy the city of Jerusalem, but he felt forced to do so. Does this desire to salvage the city dismiss his evil actions with King Zedekiah? Again, we leave that to you. Standing against evil. As said at the beginning of the podcast, it is easy to look at the kings of the ancient world through a modern lens. Current concepts of morality are weighed against the actions of the time, and we are tempted to use our own experiences to interpret those we read about. That said, the brutal tactics of Sennacherib and the Assyrian Empire were used as a deterrent to other cities. The monstrous action taken by Nebuchadnezzar was intended to be an example to other regions against rebellion. If a person in the ancient world heard of or saw such atrocities, they would inherently weigh this evil against what they know to be good and would be horrified as a result. Though societal standards change, the comparison of the right and wrong is inherent with every person, and the intention needs to be considered. When looking at the kings of the ancient world, we should ask questions before coming to conclusions. Through this process, we are better equipped to see the full picture in context of the history in which it resides. By looking at the actions and achievements of these two kings, we can see and understand the possible reasons why, weigh the intentions, and learn from the evil actions taken so that they are not repeated in the future. Thank you for joining us on 15 Minute History. Please take a moment to send us any questions about this topic and leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast. It really does help. You can also partner with us by going to our website, clicking the support button, and donating now. We hope you will keep joining us this season as we walk in history's footsteps, 15 minutes at a time.